broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to another episode of the Investor Exchange. I'm your host today, Louis Van Copenhagen. Joining me in the studio is Joel Hewish.
Good morning, Louis. Good morning, listeners. We're down on a couple of members today, but we'll soldier through it. We've got the A-team, actually, really, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Just the two of us.
Just the two of us.
Just you and me. Oh, yeah. I've got my morning husky singing voice on,
there
too.
There we go. You've had a bit of a big weekend, have you? Camping or something like that?
That's right. Yeah. The day after a public holiday means it was a nice time. Went camping out to the Grampians, roughing it a little bit. Me and my daughter in a tent.
Right, okay.
A couple of other families.
How long did you go out there for?
Two nights away.
Right, okay.
Enjoying a little bit of rain,
yep.
But mostly sunshine.
Yep.
Having to pack up in the rain is not a lot of fun,
yep,
when you're camping. That's when you wish you had a hotel.
Oh, no
you
doubt.
You just chuck it in a suitcase and off you go.
And so you went away with a couple of other families and had a nice time, though, overall?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's nice to be with some other grown-ups and for kids to have other kids to play with as well.
And some good fresh air and a good part of the country up there.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I just switched the phone off, let myself enjoy the wilderness and the calm and the serenity.
Very nice.
Yeah. Had nothing to do with the Melbourne Cup at all.
No, okay.
I should have
probably been with you. I was knocked out of the first leg of the quaddy on both Derby Day and Cup Day and didn't win. I won zero the whole time. Had a bit of a bet over at my brother's house on the Saturday.
Yeah.
Went over to the father's yesterday and no good.
No good at all.
No. Look, I didn't bet a lot. It was $100 on both days, but that $100 evaporated pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yep. Fair enough.
To stocks, I think.
You didn't go to the races or watch the races?
No, not this year. No, yeah. I decided that... we had a few other things on the go this year, so yep. Decided to take it pretty easy.
Yeah. Have you been to the races and do you enjoy it?
I went to Cup Day last year, and we had a great time last year, actually. It was raining... It was a torrential pour for the first part of the day. When we were arriving to the Melbourne Cup last year, I just remember seeing water running across the roads, almost like it was a river. But it warmed up and the rain sort of stopped after around about 12:30 and we had a great time. So,
that's nice.
Yeah. No, yeah. I got my fix of the races last year and
yep.
Decided to take a bit of a hiatus this year.
Yep. Nice. I've never been to the Melbourne races.
Oh, right.
I've been to another city's races once.
Yeah.
It's just not my thing.
Fair enough.
I get the idea that you dress in a fancy suit,
yes,
or a nice dress,
yes,
and then you wait in long lines to get drinks, and you watch a few animals move around.
Well, it depends on how you do it, though, Louis. If you're going to Flemington and you're lucky to get into the nursery or on the rails or into the bird cage, if you're that lucky, then you don't tend to have to wait too long. General admission would be tough work, though,
yeah.
I reckon.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so don't do it with the plebs.
I don't know about that.
If I want to stand around in a suit and drink, I'll just come to the office on a Friday afternoon.
Shh.
All right, let's get into it. You've got some economic updates for us.
I've got a few different updates. I thought, well, we're at the end of the month and I'm about to put out the monthly report for our investors and just the monthly market update. But just trawling through some numbers, despite positive performance for most global markets during the month of October, the Australian equities market did finish in negative territory.
Okay.
Down 0.4% for the month. That's the ASX 200. Large companies in particular were the major drivers of the decline, mm-hmm. With the mega cap ASX 20 stocks leading the decline down by 0.8%.
Right.
But notwithstanding that gloomy start, we have had a pretty decent run for the year. So far, the ASX 200 is on track for its best year-to-date performance so far. So it's on track for its best total return performance since 2009, which was obviously the start of this 10-year upward trend in stock prices. So at the end of October, the total return for this year is a total return so far of 22%. Obviously, that's coming off the back of a pretty poor lead into the end of last year.
Yeah, it finished on a down last year.
It did, but the ASX 200 is up around about 5.4% to the end of October since is only up about 5.4% to the end of October since August of last year. So we had some damage. We started to recover. The timing of that recovery was such that this year so far looks like a pretty good return, albeit the last year was a pretty poor end to the year. But we are seeing encouraging signs across most equity markets that I'm having a look at right now. We're seeing Europe and many Asian markets starting to turn up. And we have seen all three of the major stock indexes in the United States break out to fresh all-time highs just last week.
Okay.
So we've had the S&P 500, the largest 500 companies on the U.S. stock market, has, as an index, broken out to a new all-time high. The NASDAQ, which largely has a lot of new world technology, biotechnology, innovative businesses listed on that exchange, that has also broken out to a new all-time high last week. Mm-hmm. And just this week, we've seen the Dow Jones 30 stock industrial average also break out to a new all-time high. Now, traditionally, that's a pretty good sign, especially when you see markets that have been trending sideways or haven't really made much progress for around about 18 to 20 to 21 months or so, depending on what market you're looking at. A breakout of that broad breadth of performance is actually quite encouraging. However, I do note, I put a note out on LinkedIn over the weekend stating that there were only 40% of NASDAQ stocks that are actually in an uptrend. That is, they're above their 200-day moving average, and that 200-day moving average is actually rising. So while we're getting a breakout, I suspect that we've still got a little bit more work to do before we start to see these stock markets move higher in a sustainable manner. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a little bit of a, you know, 2 or 3 week softness here as we have allow for a few of these other stocks to start playing a little bit of catch up. Mm-hmm. We are seeing that I think that a lot of the breakout in new highs on the US market is actually being led by sector rotation though, rather than by broad participation. So we're seeing
what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so sector rotation. So we've certainly seen a trend where a lot of the bigger winners over the past 12 to 18 months. So those stocks that are up the most are actually taking a breather.
Okay.
And we're seeing a trend where some of the laggards are actually starting to find favor. That rotation probably started around about 2.5 months ago. And so certainly some of the stocks that we've been in, because we've been up quite a lot over the last 12 months on quite a few of our names, they're starting to take a bit of a breather. And we're starting to see sectors like financials, utilities, consumer staples, these types of businesses actually take a bit of a breather and a bit of a pullback. If I have a look at just a number of select investments that were up, these are big brand name businesses that most people would be familiar with, particularly in the US stock market. So Starbucks was up big over the last 12 months on its growth in China.
Okay.
It's rolling out a huge number of stores over in China at the moment and executing very well. So its share price was up in a big way over the past 12 months. But in the last month or so, it's off around about, since August, it's off around about 13%. We saw McDonald's, it's off around about 11% since its 30 August highs. And McDonald's had put in a really strong 2.5 to 3 year performance since Steve Easterbrook, who incidentally he's the new CEO, he's now had to resign for having an inappropriate relationship with an employee. That news just came out over the last couple of days. But the stock price of McDonald's doubled over the last since he became CEO in 2016. But that's off about 11%. We're seeing others like Hershey, the chocolate maker, Chipotle, who
restaurant
restaurant chain in the US, up big. they're all off around about 8% or so since their August highs, and that theme is sort of consistent as you look through the market as well. We're seeing some of the mid-cap stocks, some of the technology software businesses, they're all going into a little bit of a correction, and have been in a bit of a correction, and that money seems to have come out of those types of winners and are now moving into more, you know, financials, consumer staples, more cyclical type businesses, utilities. However, we will still need, if we're to see these markets continue to push higher, you will find it very hard for markets to continue to push higher while these major influences of share price performance and that breadth until that starts to participate. So that sort of leads me to believe that this is an encouraging sign. We're seeing new highs. We're seeing positive turn up in stock markets more broadly. But I don't know if we're really going to head off to the races over the next 3 or 4 weeks. I still think that we've probably got a little bit more work over the next 6 weeks or so, six, maybe 8 weeks or so, before we start to see that breadth start to broaden out a little bit.
Okay.
And we get a more sustainable push higher.
Right, right. It sounds like you're licking your lips a little bit, watching a few things.
I certainly am. We have been we've been running frantically in the office, screening and searching for stocks and deep diving, and we're probably likely to make quite a number of changes to our portfolios over the next 4 to 6 weeks or so. We have a number of targets that we've been hunting and stalking that we're completing our due diligence on that are themselves getting close to breaking out. We added 3 to the portfolio and cut a couple just last week, and I think there's going to be some more changes come out over the next month to month and a half or so as we get prepped and ready for perhaps what we think could be a nice leg higher in 2020.
Okay, fantastic. Mm. Well, watch this space. You heard it here on the Investor Exchange. Do you have any more for us?
I have. Look, we're not finished. Look, today I just thought it'd be a good chance to just take a nice broad overview in terms of what's happening. We have commented previously on the popping of the IPO bubble.
Yep.
So just a little bit of work, did a little bit of work going through and hunting through exactly what has taken place over the past 6 months, 12 months or so. So we can see that a number of these big names, in fact, we've got 8, 9 IPOs actually that have come out over the last 12 months that have drawn a lot of attention. 2 years actually. Snapchat, Dropbox, mm-hmm. Pivotal, Uber, Lyft, Spotify, Pinterest, SurveyMonkey, and Cloudera.
Yeah.
So these are 9 US listed IPOs that have come out over the last 24 months. All but 2 of them are actually higher than their closing price on the day that they listed.
Right.
And that's 24 months later.
Okay.
So 4 of them are down by more than 30%.
Jeez.
So it just, just an indication of how savage that change in sentiment has been, where it used to be just blue skies, hope and pray, and revenue growth at any cost.
Yeah.
Profits do matter.
Yep.
And investors are starting to realize that profits do matter.
Mm.
We've also had just last Thursday, the US Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 0.25%. So that's the 3rd rate cut that they've made in the last 4 months.
Right.
Lowering interest rates from a 2.25% band to 2.5% band, 2.25 to 2.5% band, mm-hmm. down to a 1.5 to 1.75% band.
Right.
So I think that, obviously we've mentioned that interest rates and cutting of interest rates is supportive for financial markets. We're starting to see that. We've had 3 interest rate cuts here in Australia as well. And our stock market is only about 1.7% away from its all-time highs. And most recent highs as well that took place in August.
Yep.
So interest rates should be supportive. We're not seeing financial stress. We are expecting that corporate earnings should improve into 2020. So these are positive sort of developments that are taking place in financial markets. So stay the course. Stay the course and be looking for strength and looking to allocate to those stocks that have got really sound fundamentals, are profitable.
Yes.
And trade at fair valuations.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like good advice.
I've got one other little thing that I want to update you on, Louis, and some of the listeners. I just came across this article. It was an article out of the Australian Financial Review, and it is based on the third quarter report from JLL, Jones Lang LaSalle. They're the property group that does a lot of commercial real estate marketing, valuation, and they're quite active in the apartment markets as well. Anyway, they are on record in their report, the apartment market report for the third quarter 2019, on record to saying that in 2021 they expect to see a significant supply shortage of apartments.
Oh, right.
Which is a big flip from where the market had been over the past, 5-6 years or so with the construction boom.
Bit of time. Yeah.
So they have mentioned in their report that the total number of new apartments currently being marketed has dropped 72% from their national peak of 34,488 in the third quarter of 2017, which is practically where the peak of the market was in Melbourne and Sydney,
yep,
to just 9,565.
Wow.
So they are saying that the volume of apartments being marketed has nearly halved over the past 12 months alone.
Jeez.
So the timing of this process to be in an undersupply across all of these various markets is a little bit different because each one of them went through their own different construction cycle and construction phase. But by mid-2021, they expect that all major markets to be either back in or very close to a position of undersupply again.
Wow, okay.
So
apartments.
Apartments.
In their cycle, looking to come back into an upswing.
So it's you know, I know that quite a number of listeners out there who were sold into apartments as investment stock over the past 5, 6, 7 years may not have been all that pleased with the returns that have been generated since they purchased those properties. But there's a little ray of sunshine for them for perhaps a bit of an improvement in that particular sector.
Yeah, okay. Good to know. Well, investors out there, that's certainly something to hold on to. Very good. Thanks for that, Joel.
No dramas, Louis.
We'll take a quick break.
Thank you.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
And we're back. I want to talk about something which extends on my last topic. I was talking about making decisions last time, and I touched on self-sabotage.
Yes.
Because when people are making a logical decision, they think about what are the benefits if it works, and what do I lose if it doesn't work?
Mm-hmm.
And last time I was talking about, well, what do you have to lose in order to make it work?
Yes.
So self-sabotage comes in where we see ourselves consciously or subconsciously having to let go of something that we actually don't want to let go of. And the example I used was people who like to complain.
Yes.
If they take an action which then leads to success, well, then maybe they lose the ability to complain.
And that whole concept of self-sabotage is around being in your comfort zone, isn't it?
Yeah.
And those who are successful consistently push themselves to get out of their comfort zone.
Yep, that's right, that's right. Now, something which is extremely important is to know exactly, well, what is that comfort zone? What is the behavior that I am comfortable with? And understanding the patterns that I constantly go through, again, subconsciously or consciously. And the concept of the money blueprint is something which I've read about.
Mm.
So each one of us has our preconceived ideas about money. And where do we learn about our money and how to behave and how to think of it? well, like a lot of our beliefs, it comes from childhood. So what I want to talk about today is to look at what were the circumstances that money was discussed around you when you were growing up, and what are the behaviors that you observed when you were growing up. So if I think of childhood, and if I think of the very early interactions with money, well, when you're 5 years old, you don't have any money.
Sure.
It's about asking your parents if they will buy something for you. So can I have a lolly or can I have a toy? And what did your parents say to you at that time? They could have bought it for you, and you're learning something there because you watched the transaction happen. But you probably reached a point where you asked for something and they ended up saying no. What was the reason that your parent gave for saying no? A lot of the time, it's the old saying, money doesn't grow on trees, you know. Who had that when they were growing
up?
Yeah,
certainly. Most definitely. Yep.
Or you can't just have everything that you want. So you start to learn that there's...
I'm five. Why can't I?
Exactly. So you start to taught that there are limits on things. And, oh, this thing, money, it has a limit. But then it only seems to have a limit in certain areas. So let's talk about things that people might have observed in their childhood. So let's take a child who lives in a household where they are they're living frugally. They really count their pennies. So every time they're at the grocery store, they're trying to compare the different brands. I remember my mum in the supermarket would look at 200 grams of something for a certain price and then 450 grams of something at a different price and try and do the maths.
Yep.
These days, it's legislated that they have to print the cost per 100 grams, so that helps. But it's the frugal behavior that started to shape my beliefs about money.
Sure.
What's interesting is the theory that I've read about is that children will either carry that same pattern into their own life, or they'll do the complete opposite, nothing in between. So you can have two brothers or sisters from the same household. One will adopt that frugal mindset, and the other will just be completely wild.
Rebel against it.
Absolutely, rebel against it.
Rage against the machine.
That's right. And for an outside observer, well, why can't you just be somewhere in between? And then you've got a healthy saving, but also a healthy spending. And but no, it's usually an extreme of one or the other.
And what's driving that?
I don't know. I think that's just psychology.
Yeah.
Where people will either embrace it, or as a child, you think, like you said, why can't I have it all?
Yeah.
I want to have it all. So when I'm a grown up, I'm going to have enough money so I can have it all, and then I'm going to spend wildly and recklessly.
Yeah, fair enough.
Now, let's take the same family that's living frugally, but let's think that maybe they don't live frugally on everything. So imagine a family that counts everything at the supermarket, but then on a Saturday evening, they'll go, as a family, they'll spend money on eating out, doing activities, eating ice cream, and they go nuts on a Saturday.
That sounds like my diet plan. I'm very good during Monday to Thursday, Friday, even lunchtime, and then Friday night, Saturday night, Saturday. There's always an excuse as to why I can break the discipline.
Or even let's just take one parent. Let's say you've got a parent who will save really hard in the supermarket, but get them into a shopping center, and they'll go into a retail store and buy a pair of shoes, and then they'll go into another store and they'll buy some tech device, and they'll spend hundreds of dollars and they'll just blow it.
Yep.
And for this child, they get this sort of feast or famine mentality, or they start to see, well, no, I can't spend a lot in that area, but then I am allowed to spend lots in other areas.
Yeah.
And it starts to form these beliefs. Let's look at another potential family situation in a big way. Let's look at boom and bust financial families. Like if you grew up in a farming environment, you could have had periods of time where money was everywhere.
Absolutely.
So when the times are good, the family's going out, eating lots, the parents are buying new cars, the kids are wearing nice clothes, and they get pretty much everything that they ask for.
Sure.
The next season comes around, or the next two seasons come around, and everything changes.
Yep.
Now they can't buy money on anything.
Yeah, spend money on anything.
That's right. The same might go for other cyclical industries like property developers or anything in a commission-based sales environment. If your parents worked in one of these environments, you might have gone through these patches where you would have everything that you wanted and then these periods of absolute frugality.
Yeah.
Now, how might this shape you as an adult? Well, you might repeat these same cycles, but do it subconsciously. So you might not be working in the same industry or environment as your parents, but you might set up the circumstances. So you might do it through your income or your expenses. Right. So you might go through, even if you work at a salary job, you might go through, say, a year of extreme spending, get yourself into a serious financial problem, and then have a year of absolute frugality where you have to pay off all of those debts. You've done it yourself. And what you're doing is you're recreating this boom and bust cycle because it's what you grew up with as a child.
So how do we go about changing all of that then? How do we go about trying to improve ourselves?
Awareness.
Awareness.
So today is purely about awareness. Have a think about what your childhood was like with money. And what that really means for the shaping of your money beliefs. So if I say to you, what do you think of a budget? What connotations does that bring up in your mind?
It sends shivers up my spine.
Yeah. Well, it sends shivers up a lot of people's spines, but there's other people where they actually embrace it because they love the spreadsheets, they love the control. But why does it send a shiver up your spine? Is it the thought of having that job to do, of sitting down at a computer and working it out and assessing your spending? Is it that you have to hold yourself to account? Is that what you don't like? Or is there a connotation that you have to pull back on your spending? Because there's not necessarily a need to pull back on your spending if you're doing a budget. It's just about having an awareness and an accountability. So why does it make you fearful? If you are going through periods of time where you have lots of credit card debt, why is that happening? What might have been in your childhood and the things that you experienced. Another family environment might have been that you had parents that liked to spend big on things, but they often failed. Let's take a parent who thought they could buy old cars and do them up and sell them again.
Right.
So they'd buy a bomb, but it would actually end up sitting in the garage for 3 years as an unfinished project until it was finally scrapped.
Sure.
And then the next distraction came along and they would spend money on something and they would end up spending their money unwisely on these things that never paid off.
Sure, okay.
So how does that shape a person's beliefs about money today? So where is your pattern? For some people, they will repeat that pattern, but for other people, they would never do that ever. They go to the opposite extreme and they think, oh, no, I'm not going to buy anything secondhand ever. I'm only going to buy the new stuff.
Right. Okay.
Which means that you're paying a premium for it. I mean, surely there's some middle ground. You don't have to buy a wreck and then do it up to drive around, but you don't have to go to a dealership and buy a brand new car. Why don't you buy something that's 3 years old and buy it at, you know, 60% of the price?
Thanks.
So there's a healthy moderation that can be had if you're not at one of these extremes. So that's my message today. Have a think about your money blueprint, the environment that you grew up with money, and what your early beliefs are and how they might have been formed.
Yep. Terrific.
And that's me for the day.
I think that's fantastic, Louis. And I think you're absolutely right. Awareness, being real with yourself, and not trying to, you know, bullshit yourself. That's the first starting point.
Absolutely. And so often people don't hold themselves to account with their money. So if you realize, oh, hang on, I have a credit card debt at the moment, that or a bill to pay, that's a credit card bill that's normal than it usually is. Well, hang on, has that happened before? Yeah, it happened 3 months ago again. So why am I in this pattern of getting a big bill? And just being aware of what's happening in your life. If you have a money problem, how did it come about? Is it a problem that is actually a pattern? And then why has that been happening?
Yep. Yep.
So there you go.
Awesome. Awesome. Great.
All right, listeners, we're going to leave it there today. A short and sweet episode for you. We hope you enjoyed it as much as a regular episode with half of us. Half the people, half the time.
Half the content.
In and out nice and quick. All right, thanks for being with us. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria, you're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.